Hey everyone, welcome to this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. My name is Jamie Lasanti and I am filling in here for our usual host, John Wertheim, who is over in London at a little tennis tournament you guys may know as Wimbledon. So we'll be talking to John from the All England Club about everything that's been happening in this first week. Let's bring him in now. John, how are you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. We're here on day four, Thursday, about 7:30 your time.
I was going to say, we need to timestamp this for the sake of results. It's about seven, after seven on Thursday, day four. We've already had July 4th 2 days ago. If you hear background noise, it is Mary Carrillo and Jim Courier calling a match here for Tennis Channel. But it's been an interesting 4 days. Some surprises, some non-surprises, some controversy, a gruesome injury, and it's sort of tennis business as usual.
Let's go to the most recent I want to talk about. We've seen the video. We kind of, Bethany Mattek-Sands approaches the net, kind of slips, falls, her knee buckles. She goes down, takes little bit of a long time for a physio and help to come over, but she's sort of screaming, someone help me. She has to get taken off in a stretcher. Were you there? Kind of tell us about the scene and what have you heard since then about that injury?
That was about an hour ago, Jamie. I have to tell you, I've never seen anything like that in tennis. I mean, this was just a gruesome injury. I've never seen a player on the court in that much pain. I don't know what they showed him. I was watching here at the Tennis Channel studio, so we could sort of see the court behind us. It was on court 17. I don't know what got shown on conventional television and what didn't. I imagine this is a lot of GIFs and GIFs floating around. The audio was just sickening. And if you know Bethany, she's also sort of a colorful character in tennis. I mean, I think that the fact that she's someone that a lot of us know only added a dimension to this. But yeah, I've never seen an injury like this. Clearly, her right knee gave. I probably shouldn't speculate any more than that. And I said this on the air. Sometimes in sports, something that seems fairly innocuous ends up being serious, and something that looks just awful, fortunately, isn't as bad as the video might appear. But I've never seen an athlete. Never mind a tennis player. I don't think I've ever seen an athlete in that much pain. I mean, she was screaming. I don't know if they, I don't know what audio was released and what wasn't, but their mics on the court. And
yeah, you could hear it.
She was saying, like, put me out of here. She wanted them to make her unconscious. I mean, the pain was so excruciating. And, 20 minutes, you're right. It did seem to take an awful long time. Her opponent, Sorana Cristea, just looked absolutely horrified as well. American Coco Vandeweghe came, Lucy Safarova, her doubles partner, Bethany's came to the court. She's 32 years old. She's had knee injuries before. I don't know the extent of it. She left the complex. They didn't even sort of bother with the conventional training room. I mean, I assume she just went right to the hospital, but it was hard for everyone to watch. And you just hope that it's one of these sports injuries that isn't as bad as it looked, because it looked just, I mean, it was honestly difficult to watch.
It was, and the audio did pick up, and you did hear her. I mean, probably not as much as maybe you did from the Tennis Channel base there, but it was just a horrific scene. And what was even more kind of gut-wrenching about it is when you saw Lucy Safarova, her doubles partner, as you kind of said, going for the calendar grand slam, they were, she sort of runs over, in tears, visibly upset. Obviously, this is a good friend, not only just a partner, for her on the court. And, just a horrific scene. You don't want to see that happen to anyone, especially when they're going for something so big like that.
The other thing too is that when you make contact with a player, it's a default. I mean, once there's physical contact made with a player, and her husband Justin came running out of the stands before the camera even panned, he was on the court and was over her. So sort of winning the match was the least of anyone's concerns. And I imagine, I mean, you're right. I mean, we've talked about how Bethany and Lucy Zafirova were going for their fourth straight major in doubles, that also seemed to be the least of anyone's concern. I mean, I think now it's, let's just see what exactly this injury is. But it's, I mean, I've actually kind of stayed off. I've seen some speculation and I've seen some video. I've stayed away from it. But I mean, honestly, at this point, you hope it's not career ending.
Definitely. Well, we'll stick with the women's draw here for a bit. Another kind of result today, you know, so we saw Petra Kvitova, obviously a two-time champ, you know, go out yesterday. She was kind of a top favorite here. And then today, three-seed Karolina Pliskova goes down in three sets as well. Another big-time favorite for the title. Who is the favorite in the women's draw now? I mean, who do those losses open up the draw for?
Elena Ostapenko of Latvia. No, I mean, this is, you know, the funny thing about that, when Serena Williams, who's obviously now in the third set of her pregnancy, when she went off tour and when she missed the French Open, the thinking was that the draw was wide open. And we did have this unseeded player in Ostapenko win the title. But until then, it wasn't that crazy a draw. I mean, Simona Halep, who a lot of people picked to win, got to the final and was a few games from winning. Pliskova, who was a top five player, got to the semifinals. I mean, it didn't break quite as crazy as everybody thought. This tournament is breaking nuts. I mean, Karolina Pliskova was a lot of people's choice to win. She was the favorite with the betting houses. As you say, she lost today to a player who's barely in the top 100 and really faltered at the end. I mean, a lot of people thought Petra Kvitova, back from that home invasion hand injury, was ready to win. That proved not to be the case. Madison Keys is out of the draw. As we speak right now, Andy Kerber is the top seed and a finalist last year, is probably statistically the best player to win. But, you know, who knows at this point? You do have a feeling this draw is going to open even wider. And, you know, you look at a player, Coco Vandeweghe is a name that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. I said it half jokingly, but I think Ostapenko has a certain toughness to her. I think it says a lot about her that age 20, coming off this life-changing result in Paris, she's come here and won both of her matches. She's clearly not so overwhelmed by this new status. You know what? I mean, honestly, to me, it makes it kind of fun. I mean, the men's game has been admirably predictable, and I think that this is the opposite, and there's a certain fun to this as well. So, you know, I mean, I think that you have to look at Venus Williams, for example, as someone who suddenly has a real chance here. I thought Pliskova going out today, though, was a big, big upset. Kvitova, if there's still a little rust in only, you know, her third tournament since this injury, you sort of understand it. Madison Keys also has been injured, hasn't played a lot. But, you know, Pliskova with that big serve in this court, and she really seems to have gotten her confidence. The fact that she went out in the second round, and the fact that she now has a losing lifetime record at Wimbledon. And this is the number three player in the world who moves pretty well and has a huge serve. That's just sort of inexplicable for me.
Yeah. You mentioned Ostapenko, and so yesterday, the Ostapenko match and the Keys-Georgie match were kind of both finishing at the same time, sort of the last matches to conclude on day three. And what I thought was interesting, and I know you said, you know, Keys sort of just coming back, she may not be in the shape that she was, you know, before her injuries, but there was a point where Ostapenko and Keys had both forced the tiebreaker, and they both had put themselves in a good position there to win it. And, you know, both of them force a third set, but then you see how, you know, they both responded. Keys ended up losing 6-1 in that final set. Ostapenko wins 6-3. And just as you said, that fiery attitude of Ostapenko, you know, she didn't back down. She didn't kind of lose hope after, you know, dropping the first set there. It was impressive. I agree with you. I think she's definitely a name on the women's side that could break through here. And quietly, I also want to put out Muguruza has been, you know, kind of making her way through. No muss, no fuss. Who knows?
No, I mean, Muguruza's here. Remember, she was a finalist 2 years ago. She's here without her traditional coach in Sam Sumic. And Muguruza is a very up and down player. We've seen the down. We've seen the up as well. I think you're right. I think I would add her name to the list. I don't think, I mean, with Simona Halep in it, I don't think it's going to be a situation in Paris where an unseeded player is going to win the title. But, I mean, the other thing, too, honestly, any winner now is almost a surprise, maybe Kerber notwithstanding. I mean, if Venus wins, if Venus wins her sixth title here almost a decade since her last one, it's quite a story. If Halep, a few weeks after losing that French Open that she probably should have won, if she can rebound and win Wimbledon, that's a story. I mean, the one thing about this open draw is it's sort of a story no matter which way the plot breaks, but it's been very unpredictable on the women's side.
All right, let's switch over to the men's side. Who's impressed you most so far in the tournament for the men?
It's a little early to tell. We saw Stan Wawrinka go out, and other than that, not much in the upset department. Del Potro lost to Ernest Gulbis today, but otherwise, you know, Roger Federer has looked terrific. Novak Djokovic has looked terrific. Remember, Federer and Djokovic only had to play 40 and 43 minutes, 40 for Djokovic, 43 for Federer in the first round. Neither of them has really been tested. Andy Murray has looked very good. I mean, you just sort of go down the list. Sasha Zverev, as I say this, he just got off the court beating Francis TFO. It's been a nice tournament so far for the favorites. I think that everyone's looking for a Nadal Federer showdown, maybe a rematch of Murray Djokovic from a few years past. But realistically, it still seems very early on the men's side. None of the favorites have really been tested yet.
We have had some off-court kind of ruckus happening. You touched on this a little bit in your mailbag column, but let's talk a little bit about Bernard Tomic. Today he was dropped by his racket sponsor Head after his comments and his post-match press conference after his first round loss, saying that he felt bored during the match, and he admitted that he had called the trainer over not for treatment, but basically just to disrupt his opponent momentum. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the fake court call, because to me that was almost more galling. I mean, he's not the first player to have momentum and motivation issues, and I think if you know a bit about the backstory, he had a rough childhood and a controversial father. There's a part of you reserve some pity for Bernard Tomic, and some of that press conference, I don't know if people can go online and see it on the Wimbledon website, but some of that press conference really sounded like, I don't want to play psychiatrist too much, but a call for help might be overly dramatic, but it did not seem like a mentally well person. I do think that we should pause. I'm glad you brought up the fake court call, because someone made a good point to me. They said that cheating is an issue in junior tennis. You and I posted a piece on SI.com by a young junior player a few months ago that talked about it. And someone said, listen, here you're at Wimbledon. You've got a court. You've got all sorts of officials. You're surrounded by fans. And if you're even cheating then, calling a fake bathroom break, basically, if you're cheating then, what hope is there for the back courts at a boys 16 event? And a lot of people have talked about the sort of the motivation and Tomic basically admitting he didn't give it his all. And obviously there's a history here. He's not called Tomic the tank engine for nothing. I mean, this has not come out of nowhere. There's a long history of fines and of shaky performances. You know, this is a guy who was once a top 20 player and is now, out of the top 50 and seems indifferent. And the remarks he made about how, listen, I could win the trophy or I could lose in the first round, it wouldn't make a difference to me. I mean, again, this seems like somebody who's not in a good place mentally. But I do think that cheating is something that got a little bit overlooked. And again, it's the same with other sort of shaky tactics and the well-timed bathroom breaks that we tend to see in the women's game. And even, people have put shrieking in that same category. And the point that was raised to me, and I think it's a pretty good one, is if the pros at the highest level with fines and officials and, video of every match, if they're bending the rules, what hope is there for, the college tennis match or the junior match?
Definitely. And so the fine, $15,000, was about 1/3 of his prize money and was for unsportsmanlike conduct. So as you said, I think because of his comments afterwards sort of making the headlines, I think the actual disruption that he, you know, admitted to was, you know, lost in the shuffle a bit. Any other sort of news from around the grounds, kind of off-court storylines that you can tell us about that maybe we don't see on TV?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a bit about Bethany Mattox-Sands and her knee injury, and I think one thing that it sort of brought home was just that it's a combative sport, and it's two players, one on each side of the net, and it's confrontational and it's individual, but there is this sense of community. And you saw players, including her doubles player, Lucy Safarova, who ironically is on the court now playing and winning her singles match, but you saw all sorts of players sort of come onto the court, Coco Vandeweghe, and then I was in the lounge afterwards, and it was just this really sort of gloomy mood. You know, here we are, it's a beautiful day, it's the fourth day of Wimbledon, this beautiful tournament, and there was a sense that there sort of had been this injury in the family, and it was really a dark mood. And it reinforced to me that at the end of the day, this is sort of a traveling family, and the players can compete against each other, but that doesn't mean they have to dislike each other. I think, you know, Tomic people are talking about a lot as well on a variety of levels. One of them is, and Justin Gimelstob made this point on our air, which I think is interesting, that in this era of the Big Four not just playing so well, but also being so professional and also having this demeanor and the sportsmanship, it really throws into sharp relief these other tantrums. So if this were other eras when the top stars were complaining and throwing rackets and getting fined, it would be one thing, but at a time when the very, very top of the game wouldn't do anything to run afoul of the rules, the fact that you've got a player ranked so much lower, basically saying that he wasn't giving his total effort and that he had this bogus court call, I think that makes it all the more striking. You know, one story that has caught my attention, Victoria Azarenka, who is back from maternity leave and seems really in a good place. Her son Leo is here. He's on the practice court when she practices, but in the nursery or with her mom when Azarenka plays, and she's been terrific. I mean, she's a two-time major champion. We were talking before, Jamie, about who could fill the Serena's out and the Pliskova's out and Kvitova's out, who can win this thing. Azarenka is a name that I probably, if we could do some audio magic, I would probably go back and add that, but it's been fun to see her as a mother. We had a lot of talk about injuries in day one and what to do with players who clearly were playing just for the first round prize money that is about $50,000. But, you know, I mean, I think this is kind of typical of a two-week tennis tournament, that the first few days you've got some random stories, and, you know, you got a player, Medvedev, who tossed coins mockingly at an official. You sort of have these silly under-the-radar stories. I mean, John McEnroe compared Djokovic to Tiger Woods. That got some attention. But ultimately, sort of the tournament grows up in the middle week and in the second week, and then it becomes a lot more about the stars and the tennis and who can win the trophy. But again, I mean, you and I are talking, it's still before 8 o'clock on Thursday, and honestly, we've got Federer in action. We had Djokovic win. We've had a lot of good matches. Zverev beat TFO. We had, you know, Milos Raonic and Dimitrov, and really the mood has been completely subsumed by this horrible Bethany Mattox-Sands injury. It really seems to have, at least in the players' lounge, really sort of cast a pall over everything today. We'll sort of await further word on how she's doing. But that it really, I think, Martina Navratilova was here, and then she didn't even want to go sort of practice. She was so shaken by it. It really, understandably, when you see the video, but it's really cast a pall over this entire evening.
It's interesting because I think, you know, you don't really see that sort of thing happen. You know, tennis is not necessarily a contact sport, right? We wouldn't say we see, you know, gruesome collisions like we may see in a soccer match when, you know, players go up for headers, or obviously in a, you know, a football game, or, you know, even in basketball when players are fighting, you know, down for a loose ball or something like that. I mean, this was something that sort of happened out of nowhere, but it's really interesting to see, you know, you always see the teammates of people, you know, go down on one knee, or, you know, they come out to kind of support the player. But it's really interesting to hear you talk about kind of the whole tournament, you know, and it's not a small place, Wimbledon or the All England Club, right? Kind of the whole tournament coming together after something like that's remarkable a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, and they're, especially at a tournament like this where there are TVs everywhere. So they're in the lounge, in the walkways. If this were, you know, wherever, name your, you know, Cincinnati or just pick your, you know, Barcelona, it's unclear if people would have seen and heard it. But a tournament like this where there's microphones on every court and multiple cameras on every court, everybody watched it. I saw that there were a number of GIFs or GIFs floating around. I mean, it sounds really crass to say this, but I also think there's a financial element to this, that if you have a horrible, you mentioned, you know, soccer players and, you know, head injuries, heading the ball or gruesome NFL injury, but, you know, they're guaranteed their contracts in those sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think something that someone else said to me, they said, listen, if that's me and I'm missing months and months and months of tennis, that also means I'm missing months of paychecks. And mm-hmm. again, the first thing when you see Bethany Maddox fans writhing on the ground isn't about lost income, but I do think that there's a big difference in an individual sport where it's eat what you kill, and an injury that takes you out for a long time also has big financial consequences. That's something that two people have brought up to me in the last hour that, you know, I think probably bears some mention as well.
Definitely, as you said, not a first mention, but, you know, there are exactly. Definitely repercussions that just kind of echo beyond, you know, the initial injury. But as we said earlier, we hope it's not as bad as it seems, and we hope that she kind of is on her way to a quick recovery already. We'll keep you updated on her status there. You did mention the retirements. We had another one to bring the men's total to 8. So that was a big story. I know a lot of people were going back and forth on what the protocol should be there. And, you know, a lot of people were also concerned because the center court ticket holders, you know, kind of got gypped in that first day with Djokovic and Federer. And then, you know, you end up seeing, you know, one full match only. You touched on a little bit in your column about sort of a solution for this or what you believe. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is a solution the ATP has tried. And I think it makes even more sense in the majors where everyone is going to be there anyway, which is basically everyone that's eligible to play. So everyone, if you're make the draw cutoff, which usually is, you know, in about 100, you get paid. And if you can't play, you still get your money. Maybe you come and maybe you do a kids clinic or an autograph signing. But everyone that's eligible gets at least their first round money. And if you say, listen, I'm just not up to it, I'm compromised, I'm not going to be able to play, then a lucky loser takes your spot. The lucky loser doesn't get paid or get ranking points unless he or she wins. So basically the tournament isn't paying out any more money. The guys who are playing now, even when they have no hope of winning, who are just here to collect a check, they still get paid. And we have these options now that are being given to lucky losers who say, listen, I may not be getting paid to take the court, but if I win, then things are looking good for me. So I think everybody, it's a win-win-win. And the other thing too is the fans win too, because you'll get to see fully healthy players. And, you know, I mean, I sympathize with the players. I mean, it's a lot of money. If you're, you know, ranked number 90 and you can get $50,000, 35,000 pounds just for showing up, you've earned that right. And it's a tough sport financially when you get away from the top, and these players have earned it with their ranking. I think it's rational behavior to say, listen, I'll go out there, and even if it's only for a set, I still want to get paid. But at the same time, you're right. I mean, the fans feel cheated. It doesn't make for it's just not a good look. You're also depriving a colleague who is in a position to play a full match a chance. So I think this is a pretty easy solution, honestly, which is not something you often get. We'll see if wise heads can make it happen. But it doesn't seem like there's a lot of downside.
No, for sure. And it's interesting because I think a lot of people, you know, just a kind of a casual fan, they're like, retired, you know, like, why did they just quit like that? You know, I think it's for an athlete, from an athlete perspective, I think it might be a tough thing to sort of give yourself up before you even tried, right? You know, you come in, it's such a grand tournament, you're kind of preparing for this, and you maybe you aren't, you know, 100%, but I think it's kind of also, on the flip side, just to play devil's advocate, a tough thing for a decision for a player to make when you've sort of put all your effort into things, and then you want to give it a shot, right? It's an interesting
situation. Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. I mean, Jack Stock, for example, had what seemed to be a knee injury. He can go out there and, like, serve bombs and hit forehands and doesn't necessarily maybe have to be 100%. But, again, you do hear of these instances where, and there are rumors in the locker room, and the players who are next up on court are told, like, you know, leave your phone on, don't go far, because we don't think this is going the distance. I mean, there are, mm-hmm. I think you're right. Sometimes, as a competitive athlete, you say, you know what, I just want to give it a shot. But there are a couple instances where you know that the player had zero expectation of winning. And I think those are really the cases where they're trying to correct it.
Real quick, Americans kind of doing pretty well in the tournament, I guess, so far. Anyone in particular, you know, we should watch out for, or that impress you?
I'd look to the women's side. I mean, I'd start with Venus. Allie Risk had a very nice win today over mm-hmm. Kristina Mladenovic, who actually has won more matches than any other player on the women's tour. Allie Risk, a very nice grass court player, and she plays Coco Vandeweghe next, who's now with Pat Cash and has looked terrific so far. This surface really fits Coco Vandeweghe. She also, I mean, a little bit in that Ostapenko way we talked about. There's a certain toughness to Coco and a competitive fire that I think really helps her. After that, you know, John Isner lost today, a match that realistically he should not have. I mean, John Isner shouldn't be losing to Duty Sella on grass. Jack Stock at full health, I really would be watching him, but it seems as though he's a bit compromised. Here comes Daniela Handzukova, who has called it a career after a former top five player. 8 years. What was that? 18 years. 18 years, she says. We congratulate her as she walks by. Former top five player who announced today her retirement, and her walking past gave us a chance to acknowledge that. Where were we, Jamie? American players. I wish Jack Sock were healthier. Francis Tiafo just lost to Zverev, another next generation player. Jared Donaldson is a player to watch, but I think realistically the players to watch from American standpoint are going to come on the women's side.
Awesome. All right. I think that's all I have for you. We'll let you get back to the end of the day here, and we'll check in again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jamie. Take care.
All right, everyone. That was this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. That was a fun conversation with John. Checked in on all of the happenings and things going on around the grounds at the All England Club. We'll have another podcast next week. Have a good week, everyone.